G'day, Rory Cost-Jason here, about to do the podcast for Our Town, Our Team.
All right, yes, another edition of the podcast, Nathan Ryan. So, you know, with Rory Cost-Jason, I really appreciate you being here, Rory. I thought it would be really cool because it's almost been a year to the day that you announced officially that you'd retired from rugby league. A year on, I guess a lot's happened. You're now coaching the ISP side for the Knights. How's that journey been for you, transitioning pretty quickly from playing into coaching?
Yeah, it has happened really quickly. Didn't think too much about coaching before I got injured, and then Brownie and Moon spoke to me about doing the junior footy, and then I said, oh yeah, sweet, I'll give it a go. And then obviously Germ got his job over at Huddersfield, and before I knew it, I was coaching reserve grade. So yeah, it has been a quick transition from player to coach.
What was that conversation like when Germ got the call to head overseas, and they obviously needed somebody to step in for the remainder of the year? Brownie just come straight to you and go, what do you reckon? Or is that something that you were, you know, you would have heard that Germ might have been on the way out? So were you sort of thinking, oh, I wouldn't mind, you know, trying this out?
So our junior rep season we'd just got knocked down the prelims, I think maybe a week earlier. So and I'd heard Germ obviously was moving on and they needed someone to fill that role. Whether that was going to be someone from inside the club or external, I had no idea. And I wasn't thinking too much about it because we were still just wrapping up our junior rep program.
Yeah.
And then Moons just called me in his office and said, we've gone through the possible replacements and we think we'd like you to do it. So I had a little think about it and said, you know, I'll do it if Biscuit, Scotty Jura can help me.
Yeah.
And Moon spoke to Biscuit. And I probably should have spoke to Biscuit before that, actually, and said, do you mind, does your wife mind if you help me reserve grade for us a year? But he was keen to do it. And obviously both of us really keen to learn and progress as coaches. So it turns out it's a good opportunity. Very difficult and challenging space to coach, but good for learning.
How's it been for you? Because in the space of 12 months, you go from coming to the Knights as one of their bigger name signings to then having a freak training mishap, which has then taken your career away from you. Now you've moved into coaching. How do you sum up the last 12 months? Have you had much time to reflect on it?
I don't know how to sum it up. Not ideal. rather be playing than coaching still. Not even just playing at a first grade level, just playing the game because I actually enjoyed it. I think that's something that I've been able to reflect on since haven't been able to play since 2016 now. You realise when you're playing week in, week out at a first grade level as a job, because it's so serious and because you want to get the results for a number of different reasons, you forget that footy as a game, just if you look at it just as a game, it was actually really fun. I really enjoyed it. I liked everything about it. I liked that it was hard. Like, I liked the physicality of it. I liked the camaraderie you get by going out there and facing a challenge with a team of other blokes that want the result just as much as you do, and being able to overcome that. You can't replace it. Whether it's at a first grade level or if it's just at a local footy level. Yeah, the love of that, you don't replace that, and I can't do that anymore.
Yeah. Was there much of a grieving process because it was taken away from you?
I don't know. You'd probably have to ask me missus how she probably thinks I was, didn't handle it as well as I thought I did. But I kept really busy in that time too, so like I just seen that I was contract with the club. I was injured. I treated it kind of like any other season-ending injury. Although it ended my career, I still seen, well, while I'm here for this year, I'll just keep training and keep, you know, helping out as much as I can.
Yeah.
Just in a different role where I can't actually play. So I think that helped me transition and probably stopped me from sitting at home and sulking.
So let's go back to the start. You're essentially a local product, right? You grew up around the Hunter area.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were scouted as a teenage age by the Sydney Roosters.
How it actually happened was one of my mates got signed with the Roosters. And like he's old man and like a few people said, oh, I should go down and trial.
Yeah.
Like at the Roosters open trial for SG Ball. So I said, okay, right, I'll have a crack and got it through the open trial and then went on the next weekend and played the invitational trial and then got a training trial and then earned a spot and then earned a jersey flag contract, which led to another contract, which led to end up being a full-time contract at the Roosters. So
how old were you when you first moved to Sydney?
Just turned 18.
18.
Yeah. So it was me and one of my best mates from home. And
you guys living together? You get a share house with some other Roosters boys? Or
yeah, no. So me and my best mate, Brad, and Reese Pritchard, who ended up playing first grade for the Roosters.
Yep.
We're all from the coast, so we end up all moving down together. Nice. We all played SG Ball together that first year, and then we end up for Fleg. We lived together that first year.
So at the time, the coach of first grade was Brad Fittler.
Yep. So the year I went in full time, 08, was Freddie's first year as head coach.
I think you're right, yeah. How was that experience under the learning tree of Freddie?
Yeah, well, obviously Freddie, it was a bit different, but for me, I grew up, like Freddie was my favourite player. So like, I was stoked. I thought it was awesome. So
were you a Roosters fan growing up?
Yeah, I was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably partly because Freddie was my favourite player.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah, it was for me, I was stoked.
There's some awesome stories about some of the things that Freddie would get some of the players to do. I was speaking to Sean Kenny Dow the other day and Skids was talking about when he dropped a couple of balls, Freddie gave him a footy and said, mate, you've got to carry this around 24/7. If I see you without it, I'm going to find you. Like it's a pretty funny story. Is there any other, standout quirky memories of your year with, Freddie?
No, it was a long time ago now. And like at the time I was playing reserve, I didn't play first grade that year. So didn't have as much to do with Freddie and the first grade side as Skid or all the other guys that were playing regularly. But I do remember that though, having their own footy and that. So.
Yeah, it's pretty funny stuff. The emergence of Mitchell Pearce that year was obviously a big one. He's now at our club and doing some great things. Was there a buzz around Drew when he was first coming through the grades? Like you would have seen that firsthand.
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure Junior's first year at the Roosters in jersey flag was my first year in jersey flag. Although he was only 17, everyone knew how good of a player he was and how good he was going to be. So I guess that's part of that buzz you're talking about. And I think the next year or the year after he debuted and he's played 250 games now and Origin premiership winner. Outstanding career and still a heap to go.
Yeah, 100%. Hopefully a Newcastle premiership. No pressure. At the end of the Roosters, you're off contract. So talk me through the journey of how you left Bondi Junction and ended up at the Melbourne Storm.
Yeah, so I probably made my path the hard way. So my first year full-time, like I said, didn't have the best year, didn't debut that year, and then didn't get re-signed. So at the time, Melbourne had their feeder club on the Central Coast. Got a call shortly after the season to tell me from Melbourne. I can't remember who it was now. From someone at Melbourne saying, I would like you to play for a feeder club on the Central Coast. Obviously, that's where my family's from, so that was where I was moving to anyway, which worked well for me. And they said, we'll keep an eye on you. And, if you go well this season, I'll give you a training trial at the end of the year leading into the 2010 NRL season.
Yeah.
And about halfway through that year, Tony Adams, who was working at Melbourne, the time had a lot to do with the guys that were transitioning kind of between NRL and Reserve Grade, so Central Coast from Melbourne, the Melbourne-based players. Yeah. He said, yeah, we'd like to bring you down. They were also starting a Reserve Grade side in Melbourne, based in Melbourne, that would play in the New South Wales Cup.
Yep.
So I said, yeah, sweet, I'll come down. And that was pretty much how I got my chance to go down to Melbourne at a training trial for the 2010.
Was there ever a moment in 2009 where, between not getting re-signed by the Roosters and moving back to the Central Coast, where you thought the dream might have been over, or did you?
No, 100%. Yeah? I think anyone that, you know, once you fall out of a system, it's really hard to get back in.
Yeah.
So when you're in that situation, for me, I just thought I was going to work really hard that year. Like I trained a lot on my own, did everything I could to have the best year I could footy-wise.
Yeah.
When I was turning 22 that year. So I thought, well, if I'm not, you know, back in a system next year, then my idea was I was going to save a heap of money and go backpacking wherever it was. Like,
okay.
Go to Europe, always wanted to travel. So
that
was kind of my idea. So I was working with my old man, training and playing part-time.
Yeah.
And then still when I went got the training trial, I still thought, oh, more than likely I'm not going to get signed to a full-time contract in Melbourne.
Right.
So I was thinking, I'll go down there, do the pre-season, then probably be shown the back door after Christmas.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'll take me overseas holiday and travel Europe or wherever I was going to go. But obviously that didn't actually happen.
Why the scepticism? Were you trying not to build your hopes up, or just sort of a realist, or...?
Probably be a combination of both, I suppose, and just because I knew how hard it was. And I said to a lot of kids that we've been coaching and guys in Reserve Grade, footy's, it's hard to earn an opportunity, let alone a decent career. And at that time, I'd seen the level of footy at a first grade side, squad, and, you know, knew how hard it was going to be for me to get the opportunity back in. The 20s only just come into.
Yep.
So my first year out of 20s was the first year of the National 20s comp.
Gotcha.
So I think the focus was taken a lot away from the guys that were kind of 21, 22.
Yep.
Taking a little bit longer to develop and more towards the 20-year-old guys.
Yep.
Those best guys there, we'll take them in our squad over the overage guys.
Yeah.
So for me, I just a combination of things. I thought it's going to be hard work. So that was probably what made me think that way.
No, that makes sense. So when you get to Melbourne for your opportunity, what do you remember about that pre-season? Because Melbourne pre-seasons, there's whether it's maybe a bit of salt and pepper added to, you know, what it actually is, but there's this mystique and this esteem, this pedestal that Melbourne pre-seasons, for whatever reason, are sort of held on.
Yeah, there's no GST added to those stories,
right?
I'll tell you right now. But so the first year I went down there, they'd won the comp in 2009.
Yep.
And that year, that first 5 weeks, so I was there for 3 years, did three pre-season, but that first 5 weeks was by far the hardest training I've ever done in my life. Like, we were just getting flogged.
Yeah.
It was, every session was hard. Wrestle, running, weights, everything. And then you have your camp, and it was a bit more old school then too. So the next year they made a few changes because the load was
too much.
It was pretty severe. And then the year after, 2012, when Melbourne actually won the comp, the load was even less.
Yeah.
Because they'd kind of figured out that
sports, well, we might have won and whatnot as well.
Yeah, so we got a new sports scientist from AFL, Simon Carney, for 2012 season, because they figured out in 2011, probably burned out the back end of the season because of the extensive preseason and how much hard work we'd done through the year, that we probably suffered at the end.
Yeah.
And then Simon come in and they seem to fix that balance a bit more, and you know, they end up winning the 2012 NRL competition. But yeah, that first 5 weeks are most definitely the hardest training I've ever done.
Not just physically, I'd imagine the mental toll of knowing that tomorrow's not going to be any easier.
Yeah, no, it was just a huge shock to see some, especially come from a part-time training group, and even just the distance from home as well. So I'd lived in Sydney since I was 18. I was now 22. But not being able to drive up the coast if something was on, or didn't know anyone in Melbourne.
Yeah,
I was living with a family, an older couple in there.
Just like boarding?
Yeah, just for the initial five weeks. So,
right.
Yeah, it was, all I did was train. Like, yeah. Pretty much train and then sleep.
Yeah.
So it was hard work.
And then obviously the contract came. So moving, did you move in with teammates or did you get your own pad?
Yeah. So just before Christmas break, Belly Egg said, "We're going to keep you. We'll sign you on a contract for 2010 season," which was, I was stoked.
Yeah.
Bit of hard work, bit of reward for hard work.
Yeah.
So then when I moved in with Talavea and Chase Stanley.
Yeah.
Right next to Flemington Racecourse. I think it's called Kensington, I think.
That's how bad
my memory is. I can't even remember where I lived. Lived there for a few months, and then Natalie, my wife now, she moved down and we got a place in East St Kilda, and then we stayed in East St Kilda for the whole time we were down in Melbourne.
Yeah, right. So those conversations early on in the career with Bellyache, you know, what type of person is he? Because I guess the public only sees one side of him, and most of the time, you know, it's a shot of a coaching box where he's blowing up Deluxe, or it's him post-match in a press conference breaking down the game. But I'm sure there's a completely different side to the, you know, the man behind the scenes. What are your memories of Craig?
Yeah, pretty intimidating when you first go down. Obviously, he cracks the whip pretty hard and has high expectations and holds everyone accountable for, you know, any kind of step out of line, whether that's a small error or one that's a bigger picture, especially if it's anything to do with being lazy or just not trying hard. Not an effort area is something that's non-negotiable. So you learn pretty quick that what you can and can't do. But
can you give us an example of an effort area? I'd imagine this is one of these one percenters people talk about.
Not kick pressuring or not chasing a kick or not tying in from the inside or walking when the other team's got the ball. Like, think little, just really small things in, mainly in defence. Obviously, it's no coincidence that one of the top two defensive teams wins a competition most years. So I think there's only the Tigers in 05, which were the anomaly of that statistic. So he drives those kind of effort areas pretty hard. But saying that, I think one of his strongest assets is his ability to be able to switch off and still just be one of the boys and have a joke. And like, when the time's right, if we had a team function where everyone's having a few beers, like Bellyache was able to have a few beers with the boys and still fit in and not be seen. Like, at first, when you get down there, you still see him. Oh, he's the coach, is there, he's watching me, and I better not stuff up or whatever.
Yeah.
But as you get being down there for a little bit longer, you relax a little bit and you realise, like, he's not here as a coach at the moment, he's here as Bellyache. And, like, he's obviously, his relationship with those senior players down there super strong, and they joke with him just like he's one of the boys. So, that's a different side that most people probably wouldn't see.
Is that something that you're conscious of now that you've moved into coaching, that there is that line between still being one of the boys and, you know, being the boss?
Absolutely. Because I think if you can't do both sides, if you don't have any people skills, if you're just seen as coach and kind of the boss, I just don't think you're going to have any sustained career coaching, because eventually it just wears thin, I think.
Yeah.
Like, you, for whatever reason, Probably like at most jobs, like people, you can't just not like your boss all the time.
Yeah.
And once a playing group, if they all get together and like, we don't really like our boss.
Yeah.
Well, the boss ain't there for much longer. There's a lot of coaches there that want to take that opportunity.
Yeah.
And usually that'll lead to not a successful season. And then the person that's held accountable is the coach. So,
yeah.
I think all good coaches are able to balance that.
So you're in the Melbourne system. You end up making your first grade debut. I guess technically it was part of a World Club Challenge.
Yeah.
So talk to me about that trip to England. Was that the first time overseas? And
so I've got my grandpa and mum's side's Irish. So
yep.
I'd been to England, Ireland before. But in a much different context. I was only 6 years old. So,
right.
I still remember bellyache telling me we had a trial match up in, might have been Rockhampton, I think, and got off the bus. I can't remember if it was at the airport to come home or at the airport when we just landed in Melbourne. And I remember him saying, oh, are you all sorted to go to England next week or whatever it was?
Yeah.
I said, oh, yeah. He goes, yeah, sweet. All right.
That was it.
You're in. I was like, I was stoked. Because like I said, I was just stoked that I wasn't, you know, back on the coast planning my trip to Europe. I didn't expect to be full time in Melbourne, let alone being in the squad to travel overseas.
Yeah.
And then once we got over there and we played a trial, and then bellyache said, oh, you're going to play. Yeah, I was just like, seriously? There's a drastic change from where I was 3 months ago.
It's chalk and cheese, isn't it, really?
So, yeah, that was my first game.
Your passport was all sorted?
Yeah, passport was good, thankfully. I was stoked I already had that. It was my first game, myself and Jesse Bromwich, I think that was our first grade experience, really.
Yeah.
And then went on to NRL debut round one against Cronulla.
Before we get to the debut, you came on off the bench.
Yep.
What was the role? Because you've played a number of positions in the halves, hooker, lock.
Mm.
What was the role that you'd been brought into Melbourne to play? Was there a role?
No, I don't think there was a role initially. My role was to go down for pre-season and then go back to part-time. But that luckily I got an opportunity and my role, so... Cooper had some sort of off-season operation after grand final. He wasn't fit for the World Club.
Yep.
So it was out of myself and Gaz Widdop to play that bench utility.
Yep.
Because Hinchy had gone to hooker because Smithy went to six to start the game.
Yep.
And then when Hinchy come off, Smithy went back to nine. I went into 5'8". So my role really was just to defend well and not mess up. So, which I kind of did. I didn't play that well that game, but...
All right. So what are the memories of that game?
Crowd.
Yeah.
It's cold and... I only played 25 minutes or so at the back end of the game. It was a really tight game.
Yeah.
Really close game. Tough game. They were pretty good at the time, Leeds. They were a pretty physical side. Just stoked to be there, and then we ended up winning. And at the time, I didn't realise how hard it is to win a World Club Challenge. I know it sounds silly, but
it's a long season. There's a lot to get you to that point.
To get an opportunity to win a World Club Challenge, you have to win the NRL Premiership.
Yeah,
everyone knows how hard that is. But for me,
I
just fluked it, you know. Just seeing the boys celebrate and thinking, oh, this is pretty cool. This is how good's this? Like sitting with guys that I'd watch on footy for a long time, watch on telly for a long time.
Yeah,
I was sitting next to them now after playing and winning a trophy. I thought, this is cool, and having a beer and listening to their stories and some fair storytellers in that group. Finchie was there at that time, so it was just an enjoyable trip, really, really enjoyable trip.
Did you feel like you'd made it? Was there a moment where you're like, I'm knocking on the door of the NRL, my first grade debut. Did you have a moment like that? Or
No. I don't reckon I felt like I was a proper first grader till I'd played over 50 games, I reckon.
Right.
I probably because the way it came about for me, like I said, I did a training trial and then earned a contract, and
yeah.
I always felt like I was, you know, one step away from being back at park footy. Kind of like,
I suppose that doesn't allow you to get complacent because you're always sort of on the edge.
Yeah, I never felt like, pretty much for my whole career, I reckon, every week, like I was hoping that I was still in the team.
Right.
Like I always had that in the back of my head, like, well, I hope I'm still in next week, irrespective of if I'd played well or poorly.
Right.
Which isn't an ideal mindset to have now that I look back on it. But at the time, that's how it was for me, just because I think the circumstances of how I'd earned a career, really. So, like you said, it has some advantages because you're never complacent and you always treat every game like it could potentially be your last.
Yeah.
But I think it also restricts you in certain ways too.
So round one comes around off the back of World Club Challenge victory. Was the conversation where Craig told you that you'd be making your NRL debut as casual as the call up to England?
Well, I don't really remember it, so I guess so, yeah. I remember after the game, he just showed me two clips. One of them, he said, don't do that again. The other one, he said, what was your decision process here or something?
That's straight after the game?
No, that was when we got back to Melbourne. Might have been a week after. And that was it. Coops was out for the first two rounds, so
yep.
I played the first two, and then one of them was against Newcastle, actually. And then went back to reserve grade for a little while, and then, Smithy got hurt in the middle of the year, actually, on the Anzac test, so I got a few more games and got another contract, which was good.
At what point did hooker start to look more like your position?
When I was at the Roosters, I played 5'8 till I went to the Roosters, and they said, I don't know if you're going to be fast enough to be 5'8 in first grade, so we'll play in edge back row.
Yeah.
So, right, I played that, did okay, but was never going to be an edge back row, definitely not big enough.
Yeah.
Then went to lock for a bit for flag, so I was playing a bit of edge back row and lock, and then Jim Dimmick, who was coaching at the time, I don't know if we didn't have many dummy halves. He said, I'd like you to play a bit there. And then from there, that kind of
snowballed,
become probably the position people more seen me in. But really, I never really had a position, and that was fine. I'd probably not someone that is offended by the term like utility, because if I didn't have utility value, I wouldn't have played any games.
Yeah.
So I was happy to do that role and do whatever I had to do for our team to try and win.
Was it difficult in the sense, because you speak to somebody like a Kurt Gidley, who was chopped and changed a lot, and you're victim of his own ability, just being so good in so many positions. And I guess someone like Tyrone Peachey, he's feeling that effect at the moment. Was it hard for you to prepare for games when you playing 5'8" 1 week and playing a bit of hook or lock the next week, or you just enjoy playing footy, so it didn't really affect you too much? Or?
No, it is difficult. It's definitely more difficult than just playing the same position every week for like 5 or 6 years.
Well, imagine even doing your review session. Like, what's the point reviewing my game at 5'8" because next week I'm playing hooker?
Because in 3 weeks' time you won't be playing 5'8" again, so you have to review it. But like for me, so when I was at the Cows, I played like mainly nine there, but
yeah, consistency happened once you moved to the Cows.
But
we'll get to that soon.
I was in the old around the utility and preparing, because you know that you could play a number of positions.
Yeah,
it just meant that my preparation, I had to make sure I knew what the left edge were doing in this game, how they were going to defend, or how you defend properly on an edge, how you defend in the middle, how you defend here, how you attack here, where your roles are. So, like, it's probably a blessing in disguise now that I'm coaching, because I had...
You're across it all.
Like, I didn't just get stuck play in one position.
Yep.
I've got some experience in a few positions, so I kind of know like a little bit of how each role works and how they all fit together. Because playing a middle forward, you know, you need to just do your role and listen to the halves. Playing nine, you need to, it's a little bit more organisation.
Yep.
Playing in the halves, even more organisation. Like, played centre, so I played every position except for fullback and wing in first grade. So,
wow.
Like I'd done a little bit of everything, which helps, but it is hard.
So let's stick in Melbourne for the moment. 18th man for grand final.
Yeah,
what was that like? How close were you? I'd imagine that conversation would have been pretty tough.
The captain's run, Toddy Lowry, he went off with a sore calf, went to get a scan, and Belly came up to me and said, "I think Toddy's torn his calf, you're playing tomorrow."
Wow.
And I said, "Yeah, sweet, bro.
Bring it on."
I was prepared. I look back now and I think, I probably didn't deserve to play in that grand final, so I'm glad it didn't happen at that time. I was very close. The scan result came back later that afternoon, Toddy was going to be okay.
Yep.
But yeah, there was a point where Bellick said, "I think Toddy's gone, so you're in."
Remember the emotions at that moment? What
just
you were feeling?
Excited, and it's like, "Oh, cool!" Like, and just the thought that come in. I'd played the first final that year.
Yep.
Because I think Toddy was injured that game as well, or something. But I just remember thinking, like, the guys that had played there, I think I played 14 games that year or something.
Yeah.
But the guys that have played every game that year, especially our senior players, the main factor I had that motivated me for that first final was I just didn't want to let those guys down. That was my main focus, was do my job as good as I can, because I don't want those guys, all their work through all the years to get them in this position. I don't want to come into the side late and let them down.
Yeah.
So that probably that was... For me, that was my main thought process. Like, after I thought about, after Billy X said, initially just being excited. Yeah, then 20 minutes later, or wherever long later, I was thinking, I really need to make sure I'm prepared so that if I do have to play, I can do my job and make sure we get the right result.
So when the news came back that Todd was sweet to play, how were you feeling?
I don't remember. Like, it mustn't have felt... I don't think I was disappointed, obviously, but again, like, I didn't feel like I deserved. I'd only played 30 something games, so I hadn't earned the right to play in a grand final, in my opinion. That's probably how I look at the game. So, like, I think
very selfless way of looking at the game.
Well, footy's a selfless game, in my opinion. This is me. It's at the end of the day, the team win or lose, not one person wins or lose.
Yeah.
And like, if you got too many people that are too worried about their own circumstance, well, again, in the end, the team suffers and no one wins.
Yeah.
So, and that's probably part of the culture in Melbourne too. Like, obviously, their culture I was fully immersed in because they gave them opportunity, and I really liked some of the values they've got down there. It probably suited me and my personality. So. Which is probably why I was able to go down and earn a spot. But
so that's 2012. That year you then signed with the Cowboys. At what point did that decision to move to North Queensland?
Mid-year.
Was there an offer from Melbourne, or were you grappling with...
Yeah, I was still on contract, so I had 1 year option in my favour.
Right.
But at the time, there was a few moving pieces, so... around who was going to re-sign, who was going to move and whatever. And like, I was just looking at an opportunity where I could just try and play regular first grades, and then I could learn and improve and see if I could actually be a regular first grader, and then try and get myself in a position where, like I said, I could earn the right to be able to try and win a comp. So, I was looking, and myself and Toddy were off contract at the time, and obviously at the time with Hinchy, Smithy, Toddy and myself, we all aren't going to play in the same team very often.
Yeah.
And the Cows, Aaron Payne was retiring. So there was an opportunity for me to go up there and try and establish myself as a full-time nine. or at least get a utility spot in their best 17 every week. And I waited up and wasn't sure what was going to happen, and eventually end up deciding to go up north, which was, like, at the time, I remember after the grand final saying to Hinchy, like, oh, I'm not sure if I want to go. Like, I don't, because I just, at the time, I was just, they were quite close with a lot of those guys down there, had some success with them, debuted with a lot of the younger guys like Witter, Jesse, guys like that. And yeah, I was like, oh, I don't know if I want to go, but it was already done. So
yeah,
turned out to be probably the best thing I've ever done. But yeah, it was difficult.
So the move to Townsville, the heat's one thing, a new club, fitting in, first day of school. What do you remember about that initial first day in North Queensland? Was there somebody that went out of their way to make you feel welcome? Or
no, I don't remember specifically things like that, to be honest. Like, it was hot and it was pre-season, so it's hard. And Townsville's a lot different to Melbourne or the eastern suburbs of Sydney, or the Central Coast even. Just a huge change. But one thing I learned pretty quickly is that the people from, you know, country Queensland, they're really good people.
Like, yeah.
The majority of our squad are North Queenslanders. And, yeah, I got along with them really good, and I still am in contact with a lot of those guys now. And, obviously, because we've shared some really good experiences, but they're just genuinely good people.
So at what point in the Cowboys journey did you start to feel like, all right, I'm making some strides here, I'm, you know, consistently in this best 17? What point did that seed then start to be planted that, all right, I'm a regular, genuine first grader now?
Probably not till back half of 2014 season, I reckon. So that was the first year Greeny was there.
Yep.
I think that year kind of established myself as a starting nine, and myself and Ray kind of shared that role for most of the year. So then a conversation with Greeny kind of helped me earlier in the year. He said, we want you to feel like this is your team. I don't want you to feel like you're going to yo-yo up and down, whether that's, you know, 20 games of first grade and 5 reggies that year or whatever. He kind of give me a bit of confidence that, you know, I'm part of this team for this season. You know,
for the first time in your career, you've got some stability.
Yeah, a little bit. So, and I think probably that year, I probably played in patches best footy of my career.
Yeah.
Probably was because I was a bit more confident in, I knew exactly what my role is and how I was going to help our team the best. So.
And then I guess that then flows into the following year where there's a premiership.
Yeah.
So Jono, Cootie, yourself, Jake Granville had come to the club.
Morgo.
Yeah, Michael Morgan, just phenomenal form. Your forwards. How was that season leading up to the grand final? Are you starting to get momentum? But was there, I mean, you've been a part of successful clubs at the Storm, so successful sides, I should say. So could you see it? Could you feel it that you guys were building towards the premiership?
It was a funny year. Like, we lost our first 3 games of the year and we got flogged in the round 3 against Brizzy. So after 3 rounds, we were thinking, oh, we're in trouble. We thought we were going the grouse in pre-season. We had a really good pre-season, trained really hard. Like, everything looked good, but we just couldn't come together on the field. I don't know what was going on. And once it clicked, we had a huge streak of wins. Mm. During that time, we won both our games during the Origin period. And then we had a big lull. I think we lost 3 on the trot. And then the 4th game, we played New Zealand. And after 25 minutes, I was on the bench. I think after 20 minutes, 25 minutes, we were down 16-0, looking at, you know, 4 straight losses and possibly dropping out of the top 4. We ended up, and Morgo got hurt, and then I went on, actually. So I was thinking, not at the time in the game, but if you look back, when I look back now, I think, well, we were down there, down the barrel of our season, going really south quickly. We ended up beating them 50-16 or something like that. It's from there.
So that game was a turning point.
Yeah, well, like in that game, that I don't know what happened, but like it just like they caught fire that first 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And we weren't able to stop them. And then eventually we got a little bit of success, got a couple tries, and then it just snowballed and they just could not stop us. And then we still weren't playing that good last couple of rounds, I didn't think. I didn't play the first final in Brizzy against the Bronx. So Morgo come back from injury. Greeny said he wanted to put Ray on the bench because he thought if Morgo got hurt, he's a more like-for-like in terms of halves, which I was shattered to hear. Like, shattered. Probably the hardest news I'd heard through my career till I broke my throat. So that, I missed that game, but then we end up toweling up the Sharks at home, and after that game, that was when I think the confidence in our group really, I know that's when you could feel we were building. And then the game, the prelim in Melbourne, before that game, all our prep was calm but confident but not cocky, and we just seemed right. And then obviously the GF, we didn't play that good, the GF, but throughout that season we'd found ways to win games that we probably shouldn't have.
Yeah.
And that was how our season pretty much ended. We won a game we probably shouldn't have.
When Ray got the jump on you when Morgo returned, was there ever a seed of doubt? Like, oh, I could miss out on the run here?
Yeah, I thought my season was over.
Wow.
And I reckon if they won that game, it was. That was why it was so hard, because I missed a couple games that year. So that year we didn't start the year that well, and then I ended up playing a couple games of Reggie's that year as well. So it was a turbulent year. Finished really good, but that year itself was quite challenging for me. For whatever reason, I got a real good preseason, then confidence dipped probably our first few games, and then just didn't really get it back that much. And I think that probably was part of the reason why Greeny, he probably lost a little bit of confidence in me too, which is fine. Like, that's part of footy, and that's the hard part of coaching, I suppose. But yeah, that at the time I was just, yeah, I got it, right? Because the whole reason when I'd left Melbourne, I'd seen firsthand, went on the field, those 17 blokes that played in the GF and won. I remember the feeling I felt after that is I want to feel what they feel like. That was the main thing I got out of it.
Yeah.
And my main goal out of my whole career was to win a comp and see how that felt.
Yeah.
And I felt like at that point I thought, this is our, I don't know, I already thought it was our year.
Yeah.
I suppose going in that, and I thought we were going to beat the Bronx that game, have a home prelim, win the comp. That was my thought process.
Yeah.
And I knew if I didn't play in that prelim and we won the first round and we won of the finals, then I was gone.
Yeah.
And it was all gone, right? Yeah. So it was hard. And I'd played the last 12 games of first round. I hadn't played reserve grade since before the Origin series, so I felt, oh shit, like this has come out of nowhere.
So you're on you're on the bench for the grand final, so you're there, you're on the field. Were you still on the field when the 80th minute Jono's lining up that kick? You're back on the bench?
No, back on the bench. I played the middle half hour stint or whatever it was. Yeah.
So you're watching from the bench. All the punters are on the edge of their seat watching Jono line up this kick. You've seen him do it a thousand times.
Hmm.
Are you backing him in? What are you thinking?
I don't even know what I was thinking. I honestly can't explain. Like, the 5 minutes before, when like we were looking like we were done. We had to score in the last set. So at that point, I was sitting there like, we'd come all this far, like all this way, and we've lost. Like,
yeah.
I thought for sure we were done. And then Felty scores, and you're now faced with, if Jono kicks his goal, we win.
Mm.
Like, I've gone from thinking, oh, we've definitely lost, we're going to have to do all that again to get this opportunity again, to now we're one kick away from, like, goal achieved.
Yeah.
and so I was just a bit blank, and even just pretty much the rest of the time, the only time I kind of after Jono missed, because I thought he was going to, I thought it was in. I was watching it, like everyone, I think,
yeah,
thought it was going to go in.
Yeah.
And then just after that, the confidence in the team, I remember speaking to Jono, and we were just, and a few other boys, we were just refocusing, and there was just this belief, like you could, like we, it was like you knew, like we were good. Like,
yeah.
Like they, and I think a part of that was probably because they were so broken as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, we were, like, this is us, we're on. And yeah, 30 seconds later, we were on. So
tell me about Jono. I mean, his stats speak for itself, and he'll go down history as one of the greats, no doubt a future immortal. But to play with a bloke like Jono, what sort of confidence does he bring to a team? What sort of character is he? He obviously loves a joke, and
yeah, he's just a good guy. Like he's just a good bloke, good fun character to be around. I don't have a bad word to say about anyone. Really enjoyed my time up there, and we had a pretty good relationship, get along pretty well. So, like, loved playing footy with him because he competed so hard, and but then and off the field, he made footy enjoyable at times when it wasn't that enjoyable. I remember we were doing an army camp leading into the 2015 season, and just the way it ended up working out, we're in two lines, you run kind of side to side, and we were numbered, not so I always think I was 15 and he was number 30, so when we lined up, 15's next to 30.
Yeah,
and we were running, I think we run from, I don't know, some stupid time, 2 o'clock in the morning till 6.
Yeah.
And but it was somehow, like, towards the end we were still able to joke, and like, that's the worst situation you could be in, day 3 of a camp where you obviously don't want to be running along the road at 4 in the morning or 5 in the morning, but we still found a way to have a laugh in time. Like, that's a valuable personality trait, I reckon.
100%.
So he made serious times fun, balanced footy out well, especially going from Melbourne where a lot of the time it's super serious. Going to Cows was serious, but probably enjoyed our footy a bit more.
Yep.
Enjoyed ourselves outside of footy a bit more. So, and Jono was a huge part of some of those times.
So how did the Newcastle opportunity arise? You were off contract at the Cows, an opportunity to come back home, so to speak.
Yep.
Talk me through that process. And were you conflicted at all about leaving? Was there an opportunity to stay?
At the time, I kind of looked at our squad and knew, you know, someone's going to have to go. Like, a few of us are going to have to leave. So, at the beginning of the season, I was kind of thinking, well, you know, if Jakey's going to start, which he was, that could be me. So, I'm a realist in those situations.
Sure.
And maybe that's probably because, again,
the journey.
And I'm okay with that. That's footy. So,
yeah.
I accept that. So I had a meeting with Leeds, actually, when I was at World Club for the Cows, because I always wanted to go overseas and play. So I wanted to travel, but I didn't get to because of footy.
Yeah.
Got an Irish passport, got some family over there or whatever that I could meet, and a heap of experience that you can have over there.
Yeah.
And I just always wanted to see what it was like just living in a different part of the world. So that was what I was hoping to do if I wasn't playing at the Cows. I didn't really think too much about staying in the NRL because I'd always said I wanted to go over there. So that opportunity, I had some contact with them, and I thought, oh, that could be a chance. But that fell through when I think Seguiaro ended up going over there mid-season. So that obviously opportunity closed. And then middle of the year, I was seeing what the Cows wanted, and they weren't sure. They had a few other guys that kind of were higher priorities, which is, again, part of footy. That was fine. And they had to figure out their cap and what they were going to do and how much money and space they had left. So in that time, Newcastle, I spoke to them, and I had a meeting with Moons and Brownie middle of the year, probably around Origin time. But then it was quite a long process, too long in my opinion. Yeah, it was difficult. And the cows end up telling me real late in the season that, oh, we're sorry, we don't have a spot for you, which I already kind of had gathered, because if they did, they would have spoke to me 2 months earlier.
Yeah.
That wasn't handled as well as I probably would have liked, but again, that's footy and that's how it is. So the game before, the week before we played, 2 weeks before we played the first final, Cronulla rung. And they said, they were really late to the table and said, you know, we want you to come down here and we got an opportunity. And so then I had Cronulla or Newcastle to choose from. And I made the call probably 4 days before the first final in Melbourne. So I didn't want a contract situation hanging over my head before you start playing final series where, you know, you go out there and
back
yourself. Do your knee. It's probably going to hurt you.
Yeah, okay.
And I don't want to have any subconscious thoughts of preserving my body because I wanted to win the comp.
So, yeah.
I made a decision to come to the Knights, and it's a pretty easy decision for me. I knew my partner wanted to move back closer to home, and I always wanted to play for the Knights. I would have loved to play my whole career for the Knights because it's close to home, and
yeah.
I love Newcastle, and this lifestyle is something that suits me more, so... I was stoked to be coming here. If I couldn't stay at the Cows, I couldn't go overseas. The Knights is where I'd want to be.
So you get to the Knights, you're ripping into to pre-season training, and what do you remember about that day where you've copped a whack?
Just frustrating that it happened. It was only last 5 or 10 minutes of training, I think. First Saturday back after Christmas. So I'd had a few operations in the off season, so I'd only just got back to probably being full training.
Yeah.
Put a heap of work in over the, like, for me rehab and that to recover and try and get myself to a point where I was going to be fit and ready to do my job come round one. But I didn't know it was it. I just thought I was going to get healed in 6 weeks and I'll be fine.
So at what point did you realise, all right, this is going to be a bit more serious than I originally thought?
You see specialists and they start going, oh, well, that's not real good and we can do this. And that was like, I didn't have a choice. Like, they had to operate on it.
Yeah.
I was just really unlucky that where it fractured, it dislocated a part of your vocal cords that moves in and out. Like, its functions to move in and out to... make sound, and I dislocated that and it's lost its function, so it doesn't move out anymore. It was stuck in my throat, so I couldn't breathe very good at all, really, like, worse than I am now. And I had pretty much no voice, so they had to operate. There was no choice. I couldn't play on with that blocking my airway because I couldn't breathe.
Yeah.
And then they can't put it out, so your airway's fully open. So then you have no voice. So also I can't play without a voice.
Yeah.
You can't. The doctor is like a duty of care. He's like, I can't really do it because you won't have a voice. It's no good. So he said, I'll do it, fix it, and leave the airway open as much as I can for you.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, sweet. Well, you got to do what you got to do. So yeah. That's what they did.
So it was like simple things like just even, you know, walking would be hard to breathe, let alone running and trying to breathe.
Yeah, harder then, still harder now than what it was before. So for me, like at the stadium, if we, instead of taking the lift up to the coach's box, if we walk quickly up the stairs, right. I can't talk. I can't get me whole sentences out straight away because I can't breathe good enough.
Right.
That's why I don't play anymore.
Yeah.
It's not because if I get hit again or whatever.
Yeah.
It's because I can't breathe good enough to get my aerobic capacity up to a level where I can play rugby league. I couldn't play touch footy for fun at the moment. If I go and join in training sessions with 16s or reserve grade.
Yeah.
I have to do it in a way that I'm not going to talk to them about any coaching after, because it takes me too long to settle me breathing down to be able to speak.
Yeah.
You probably don't notice, but I notice my sentences are a lot different because when it first happened, I thought I had more air to get my sentence out.
Okay.
So I'd find that the last word of my sentence, I'd go to say, but no air was there to push it out. So right. I'd drop a word off the end of my sentence, which is sometimes I'll still do when okay. I'm trying to push too hard to get a point across. But you learn, obviously, you adapt to your situation.
Are you used to the voice yet, or is it?
I still think my inner thoughts are still in my old voice, but they're starting to come back into this now. But I'm used to it. It annoys me a lot because if I go somewhere with a heap of background noise, say if I want to go for a beer with mates or whatever in a pub and it's loud,
there's a band, you're buggered.
Yeah, no, I'm not talking to anyone. If there's a band or whatever, a loud cafe, that stuff frustrates me because that's stuff that you take for granted, just day-to-day stuff, trying to have a coffee with my missus at a cafe and I'm having to strain real hard just for her to hear me or it's not ideal. So
do you suffer from sore throats as well? Like if you are straining, then it's like
pretty much
tonsillitis constantly or?
No, like pretty much every day when I go home, I've got a sore throat.
Right.
Not like severe, but just tired and sore. I don't know if that's because, so that part they fixed, like it's stuck in my airway. So I don't know if the muscles around are trying to move it, which then.
Right, that'd make sense.
That gets, but for whatever reason, my throat, especially if I have days where, like yesterday I helped in the morning with the first grade session, then I had reserve grade session in the afternoon, then our junior pathways kids session after that as well. So when I get home after that, I just have to tell Natalie and my wife, I just need a little bit of time to let me voice rest because my throat's sore.
Yeah.
Which she's adapted to pretty well, and she's rock solid. So she's helped me heaps throughout not only the last 12 months but my whole career.
Before we wrap up, Irish international.
Yeah.
Need to touch on that. What was that experience like representing the family heritage?
Outstanding. Can't speak highly enough of it. Probably four of the most enjoyable weeks I've ever had. Real, real good bunch of blokes, both UK-based and Aussie-based. And we had to pull a death. We played Fiji, Australia and England. So how that worked out, I don't know.
Stitch up.
Yeah, but in saying that, I'm stoked that we got to play England in England in front of a packed crowd at Huddersfield, I think it was.
Yeah.
And then we played Australia in Ireland, in Limerick, which, obviously not a packed crowd, but we got to play two of the best sides in the world.
Yeah.
I loved it. We enjoyed ourselves thoroughly throughout those 4 weeks, as Irish culture is. So we drank a load of Guinness, which was lovely over there, especially in Ireland. I loved it. I wanted to play. I would have played last year.
Yeah,
that was something that was pretty disappointing about having to retire.
Yeah,
I knew I was going to miss out on that. And, I didn't get to play for Ireland again after the World Cup. Not because I didn't want to, just because physically I couldn't. I had surgeries and I wasn't able to.
Yeah.
I always wanted to. I didn't want to be a guy that just played in the World Cup. But then that's what it ended up. I played three games and didn't get another opportunity.
And just finally, some of the roommates over the years, I'm sure there's plenty that have had different quirks and habits. Who were some of the better roomies and who were some of the more stranger roomies over your years?
I didn't have that many roommates, to be honest. Like in Melbourne, I roomed with Ryan Hoffman for my first couple games, and then Gaz Widdop pretty much for the rest of my time in Melbourne.
What about teammates then? Is there a story that we can end this podcast on, of classic day at training or after a game or something that sort of stands out?
Actually, there was one good practical joke. So it was in Irish camp, actually. So we had an assistant coach that, I don't know, for whatever reason, it just ended up like a bit of banter between the squad and this coach. I don't know if he seen it as much of a joke as what we did until later on where he was in on the joke. But he wore a hat everywhere, million hats on camp. So right. I don't know how many he had at home. But yeah, we were just winding him up, and one night we decided to break into his hotel room and steal all of his hats, every single hat he had, and then we placed them everywhere like, and took photos and sent them to him and just put on their WhatsApp or whatever just for a bit of fun. But he blew up.
Yeah,
he
right.
was filthy. Just, I think he was mainly filthy that we went in his room.
Right.
The last week, so me and my roommate, Appy, we'd gone out wherever and come back, and our room was just flipped upside down. Like, I mean, everything was destroyed. Toilet paper was just pegged around our room. It was like a bomber did it. And we had no idea, did it? No idea. And eventually we figured out the two guys that did it, Luke Ambler and James Hassan. And they didn't know that we knew. So we went to the coach and stuff, went to Jed, the guy that we'd been mucking around with, said, listen, this has happened. What we want to do is pretend that we think you did it, and then we're going to overreact by doing something to your room.
Ah.
So we made up that we did something pretty bad in his room. I won't go into too much detail, but
sure.
And then we got him and the other coaching staff to sit the whole squad down and pretty much just lay down the law and say, who did this to Jed's room? You know, we know who done it, and say, you know, if you fess up and, you know, there won't be too much consequence, but if you don't, like, we know who it was. And we sat there and, because I knew I was in on the joke. Yeah. One of the boys was recording it, actually.
Yeah, okay.
And eventually it went on for a while, and then I was like, yeah, like, I did it. And
yeah.
Two of the other blokes, and we were all starting the next 2 days later against Australia.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did it. Yeah. And they said, right, you four, you're not playing against Australia this week. You aren't allowed to play.
Yeah.
And then just got out of hand. So, like, the joke, it went from being funny to guys going, no, they can't play. Like, they, like, blowing up saying, no, you just can't do that. You can't stop them from playing. Started getting hectic, and they're going, no, that, like, they didn't do this. You did this to their room, yeah. and whatever. they're allowed to get you back and whatever. And then the Jed was like, well, we didn't do your room.
Yeah.
I promise you. And then we're looking around the room. So this was still part of the joke, but it's getting a bit out of hand. And we said, well, who did our room? Like, own up. Like, who's caused this? And some of the other boys that weren't in the joke going, yeah, whoever did Rory and Appy's room, they're the ones that shouldn't be allowed to play on Friday or Saturday. They're the ones that started all this. And they're not even in on the joke. So we were sitting there furious.
God, how good's this?
Oh, whoa. And then Ambler's put his hand up. He's going, oh, yeah, Rory, I did your room. That wasn't Jed. And a few of the blokes are blowing up, swearing at him and abusing him and saying, no, it's, you look what you've done and whatever, because they didn't know the coaches were in on it.
Yeah.
And Hasso's just sitting there eating something, didn't say a word. Just just let Ambler just...
Wow.
Just, and until eventually Ambler goes, Hasso did it. And then, like, then it started, some blokes have started, they were starting their, like, infighting. They were about to say stuff I felt like they weren't going to be able to take back.
Right, it was going to be too serious.
And I was like, boys, we're only joking. Like, the coaches are in on it. I didn't do anything to Jed's room. Like, it's just a joke. And for a while, the blokes were like, what? Like, they didn't
get
that. They were that rattled by it.
Right.
But that's the best practical joke I've ever done.
Wow.
But that was, that's the only story I can think now talking about practical jokes. That was, for me, that was hilarious. I was in stitches, and we watched the video, and blokes got so angry when they realised, like, four of us weren't playing. And, like, they were fuming at the two blokes that did it. So,
have you still got the video on your phone?
No, I didn't. It wasn't on my phone. I think it might have been on Brett White's phone, maybe. I'd love to watch it again. It was hilarious. So.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's a good note to end the podcast on. So we appreciate you taking the time out of your day to have a chat and work the vocal cords. Apologise to the missus tonight on my behalf for taking it out of here.
So
yeah, you'll be all right.
On screen.
Fantastic. If you get a chance, guys, rate and review us on iTunes and Wooshka. Until next time, take care.